The Art Show on Fresh Air Radio, Thursdays at 3 p.m. A taste of all the culture Edinburgh has to offer, from theatre to literature, from film to the visual arts. Welcome back to The Art Show, covering all the culture Edinburgh has to offer, from theatre to literature and film to the visual arts. Today, we can expect an interview from the amazing local poet Courtney Stoddart, which I'm really excited about. After that, we'll have an improv performance by the Edinburgh Review to promote their brand new improv podcast. First, though, I'm joined by the student newspaper culture editors Erin and Al.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Lovely to have you back. As always, they are going to tell us what is lined up for us in Edinburgh culture this week. So, let's change things up a bit. Al, do you want to go first and tell us about what's going on in literature?
Well, actually, there's some exciting stuff happening over these 2 weeks. The Scottish International Storytelling Festival has come to Edinburgh. So they're hosting a wealth of events. It finishes on the 31st of October. So you can find the events in and around the city as well as online. Lots of them are free, which is really great. The theme of the festival this year focuses around water, so there's hundreds and hundreds of storytellers and performers from all across Scotland are converging upon the city, and also Zoom, to enlighten us with their stories. So some events which I thought I'd highlight, there's a great event happening tonight actually, the 22nd, which you can access online and book a ticket via their website. It is free, and it's telling the tale of Nanny of the Maroons. So it's actually filmed in the Scottish Storytelling Centre, and this story highlights the Jamaican hero and the protagonist in the story, who is Queen Nanny, and helped many, many people escape from enslavement from Scottish-owned plantations. And then an event which is happening in person at Edinburgh's Royal Botanic Gardens is walking around with some trees. It looks really lovely. So there's an event happening on the 24th, I believe, this Saturday, called Sylvan Steps. And it tells legends about loads of trees in the garden and the insights about these trees and the roles they played throughout history.
That's really cool. I actually really love it when the Storytelling Festival comes to Edinburgh. It's always like a really big thing every year. And I remember last year there was a really awesome event where George Orwell's son gave a talk about living.
No way.
Yeah, I know, right? He came to Edinburgh and he gave a talk about living on Jura, I think it was. It was one of the islands, with his father and his father's process of writing 1984, which was so sick. So there's always loads of really cool stuff to see at the Storytelling Festival. And it's really awesome that they're doing some stuff in person. Yeah. I really appreciate the effort they're putting in there.
Yeah,
because it's nice not to have to move it all online.
Yeah, that's so good.
Erin, what's going on in the art scene?
In the art world this week, we have, I've got one online exhibition to talk about, which is from St. Margaret's House, Edinburgh Palette. And they are always, actually, as a general plug, they are always on it with exhibitions online during the pandemic. They're one of the kind of, one of the points of reference, I think, in Edinburgh for art, where if you want to know about something going on or you want to get involved with something, they're really, really good. Yesterday, they've uploaded another pop-up exhibition called City, Land and Seascapes, and it's their latest pop-up, and it includes works by Rachel George, Pamela McMahon and Xanthia Connor. And I'm on their website now, actually, and it's got a variety of painted seascapes, photography, even kind of like jewellery inspired by the sea. So it's a real kind of amalgamation of different mediums, all uploaded in like visual form, that you can kind of look at your leisure. So you don't have to get the bus and mask up. You can just sit at home with a cup of tea and scroll through that, which might be quite a relaxing way to spend a Thursday evening, but who am I to judge? And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, I briefly mentioned a few weeks ago, but it's come back now in terms of relevance, because in the print edition of The Student this week, we have got a feature from Sophia Quatrona, and it's part of the Not Going Back to Normal Disabled Artists Manifesto by Collective. So Sophia was actually able to get an interview with Harry Josephine Giles, who is the curator of this exhibition, and they are really, really focused, as someone who does identify as a disabled artist, with producing a really radical manifesto as to how arts in Scotland should look after the pandemic. And it's a really interesting article, really, really detailed. And it gives us, I think, a really important insight into things that we thought couldn't be changed in the art world. And actually, in light of the pandemic, they are. So ways that disabled artists can be way more included, things like universal credit, access to arts events that are totally online, basically a lot of things that disabled artists have been asking for a really, really long time, are now being made possible to the wider population because of the pandemic, not because disabled artists have asked for them. So it kind of goes to show how, in a lot of ways, the kind of gallery scene and the art world have been really, really resistant to change and supporting artists from all different backgrounds and abilities because of their own kind of prejudices. And now, because the whole population can't get to a gallery without online access, suddenly it's possible. So it's quite an interesting read if you have a bit of a radical mindset and you're looking to see the art world shaken up a little. I would really, really, really recommend checking that out. And that's on print, that's online and in print. So yeah.
Amazing. I actually was thinking recently, in my interview with the Travis Theatre last week, we talked about how there are lots of ways in which COVID has facilitated processes that the disabled population have been asking for a really long time.
Yeah,
and like
exactly.
You say, until it affected everybody because of COVID,
yeah,
those things were not granted to them. And so I think it's a really, really interesting liberation issue. And I love the way that it intersects really, really well with the art scene.
Yeah, for sure.
So definitely do check out that exhibition and check out that article, which leads me on to my next question. I was going to ask you guys to kind of promote your favourite article coming up either in print or online with the student this week in your respective sections. Erin, you've kind of given us a sneak preview of one already. But Al, is there anything in literature that is especially awesome this week?
There is. So you actually find this article online. I believe it's called Pandemic Postcards. And it's from one of our newest culture writers called Laura Bellerman, who's written across the culture section and is a great
writer. She really has.
Yeah. And it's essentially about rediscovering the beauty of writing letters to friends over lockdown and how that's developed friendships. It's really sweet, lovely little piece.
That is really lovely. I like that. It's a really creative use of the literature section. I'm a big fan of that. Unfortunately, once again, Cam cannot join us this week, so we are left in the dark as to what theatre is going on in Edinburgh this week, or indeed what theatre is best in the student newspaper this week. But I hear we are likely to be joined by the brand new theatre editor, possibly in the next show. So stay tuned either for that or the week after to meet a brand new member of the student newspaper team.
Yay.
As we are, I will say goodbye, guys. Thank you very much for coming on. Lots of stuff to go to this week, especially with the Storytelling Festival coming into full swing. Coming up next, we'll have an interview with Courtney Stoddart, a Scottish Caribbean poet whose work is fantastic, and I'm really excited for you to hear it. Before that, though, let's hear Autumn Sweater by Yola Tengo. You just heard Autumn Sweater by Yola Tengo, and you're listening to The Art Show on Fresh Air. I'm joined now by Courtney Stoddart, a spoken word poet whose work I've been enamoured with for a few months now. Intertwining themes of racism and colonialism, womanhood and privilege, her poetry is political, poignant and passionate. Thank you so much for coming on, Courtney.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you. It'll be great. So we're going to have a chat about Courtney's poetry specifically, delving into experiences of poetry in a modern context and what it means to be a biracial woman in Scotland, before Courtney reads us some of her amazing work towards the end of the segment. So talk to me about poetry. How did you first start writing and performing, and what inspires you?
Yeah, so I first started writing probably around 7 years ago now. And it was really just as a kind of cathartic release. It was purely selfish reasons I was writing, just to kind of outlet how I was feeling. And then around a year and a half ago, I started performing. My friend, she goes by Nova Scotia The Truth, my friend Shahida Sinclair, she's an artist, and she asked me to perform at one of her sort of album launch. And yeah, that's kind of where it took off. From there, I just started getting sort of regular gigs and stuff. So it was really, it's been a really amazing kind of year and a half, the way that it's gone for me. So
yeah, I was gonna say, you kind of like blew up out of nowhere. It's been really lovely to see you blossom. So you started writing for selfish reasons, you said. I'm kind of curious to dig into that. As a writer myself, I often feel that people are closed off from poetry and they feel like it's not for them, not made for them, and that's because their only experience of it is through school. And it took me a really long time to kind of come round to realizing that, you know, even I can express myself through verse if I want to. So I was wondering, did you have anything like that, and how did you overcome that to start writing to express your feelings?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I mean, the sort of poetry I was exposed to when I was younger was mostly Robert Burns, like that sort of thing. Obviously, growing up in Scotland, you just get force-fed this kind of old Scottish white man poetry.
So
I never even really realised when I started writing that what I was writing could be considered poetry. That didn't even really cross my mind. It was just a kind of stream of consciousness. And then I started adding sort of little titles and all that kind of stuff to kind of give it more shape, I suppose. And then from there I was like, oh, it, you know, it can be considered poetry kind of thing. But sort of touching on the selfish reasons, I suppose I say that because I do very much write with the intention to, I wouldn't say necessarily educate, but to sort of offer a different perspective, certainly from what we see in the mainstream. So I think now I would say my poetry is less selfish in that sense, that, you know, I write with a wider purpose now, whereas when I began, it was purely for my own cathartic release, and it still is very much that today. However, it also has a kind of wider scope now, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. So like many people, I first encountered your work at Edinburgh's Black Lives Matter protest earlier this year. So obviously you've kind of moved on from this place where you were writing for you, and now you're writing for this huge purpose, really. And obviously being invited to speak at Black Lives Matter is a real honour. I was wondering, like, do you think of poetry as an inherently political art form then? Or can those two forces be separated for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like, even if you're not political, you still are. You still are political. Because it's kind of, you know, everything is politicized, whether we like to think of it that way or not.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So I think, you know, and I think as an artist, you can kind of, you know, fall into the trap of reproducing what is popular, or you can kind of tackle the state in that sense. You know, you can be sort of sycophantic, or you can be sort of morally opposed to certain ideas which can be considered popular. So yeah, I think for me, I definitely write to continually challenge what I perceive to be the very problematic power structures within the world we live in.
That's so cool. So it's like a response against kind of conventionalism and very, very radical. I would say your work is really radical and rebellious.
Oh, well, thank you.
So Kind of on that note, then, I would say one thing I find really interesting about, or kind of what I hear in your work, is these kind of ideas of Scottish exceptionalism. Because as someone who lives in Scotland, I know that, like, we in Scotland think we can rest easy on issues of racism because we're not America or we're not South. And I think it's really, really important that there are voices like yours that kind of are saying, actually, we have loads of work to do, as much as any other white colonizing country does, regardless of our, like, little size. So
no, definitely. I think the sort of Scottish exceptionalism thing is really dangerous, actually. And I think it's because Scotland has this more left-leaning political perspective, and maybe because it was it is a colonized country as well. So I think perhaps that's why Scottish people often tend to exceptionalize racism within the Scottish context. And, you know, my experience completely rejects that notion, because, you know, as a child, I experienced horrific racism, like really relentless, appalling racism from children and from adults. And that was, you know, within institutions, that was in my personal life. And it's only really as I've got older that I've been able to process all of that trauma. And I think Scotland is changing, because, you know, I walk down the street now and, you know, yes, we are few and far between people of colour, but compared to where it was when I was growing up 20 plus years ago, it has changed, definitely. But I think we still have a long way to go. And I think it's easy to become complacent when you start to see small changes, incremental changes. It's easy to sit back and go, oh, everything's fine, particularly when you're in a position of privilege. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, yes, we have made really fantastic changes, but there is a long, long way to go.
Yeah, completely. I think it's really interesting what you say, like, you referred to Scotland as a colonized country in itself, which I suppose is true, but I never really think about it that way. And I think that battle can totally skew perspective on, like, race issues in Scotland, because it's like, we are also victims. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. Definitely. You know, it's interesting how it's almost like a kind of Stockholm syndrome. You know, the sort of victim then can become the aggressor as well. And I think that's kind of what's happened with Scotland. And it's not to say that Scotland's past is to be not recognised, but Scotland played a massive role within the slave trade, within colonialism. And yeah, that has to be acknowledged as well.
Yeah, completely. That's really succinctly put. Well done.
Thank you.
So we've talked a lot about you and what your work says and what it represents. So could you read something for us now? That would be really lovely.
Yes, I would love to. So I have two pieces that I would like to read. The first one is called Black History. And I just kind of wanted to bring attention to the fact that, you know, I find the term Black History quite problematic, because it implies that we have these separate histories, and they're not separate. They're interconnected. Humans have always migrated, and that's a key part of the history of humanity. So I was trying to capture that. So this is Black History. What does Black History mean? Black History is more than mythology and dreams. More than Wakanda memes, Black History is everybody's history, and it seems our world is ripping, tearing at the seams. Can we conceive of alternative reality? Why do we aspire to riches and royalty? We do not need kings and queens, we need revolutionaries. Before slavery, most of us were farmers, storytellers, mystics, and fishermen. Some of us were seers, dreamers, liars, and wicked men. Some of us did ill deeds, and some of us planted seeds. Some died for truth, and some killed for lies, and some of us were masterminds, never recognized. And there were those who were moral, and those who would kill from their own sense of sorrow. Some would beg, and some would borrow. And there were teachers, there were painters, there were lovers, and there were haters, there were printmakers. Musicians and critical thinkers, alcohol drinkers, there were saints and there were sinners, and that's what binds us all. We are all flawed, just as we are all full of infinite potential. Our history is not merely consequential. We have been torn down and we've got back up. Some of us have been stuck, feet sinking into mud, and some of us too soft, and some of us too rough, and some of us so hard we won't let in the love, and see this system that has been built and envisioned is underpinned by exploitation. So why do we want to emulate the wealth that they have already taken? The corporate media tell you that immigration is something new. But migration is one of the main things that humans do and corporations go unchecked. They've got a lot to answer for. They're fostering perma war while we worship celebrities and our appearance overall, and we like to call it civil, but there's no civility in war. People come here seeking refuge, and we show them our closed door, watch their bodies wash ashore, and though publicly we may deplore all wars, it was likely the UK who sold the bombs which hit the floor, perpetually permeating the idea of eternal war, and while they're profiting exponentially, there's no wisdom within war. We forget wealth is not material. It is your integrity and the kindness in your soul. So please, as you grow, don't let it go. Build community, not fake stakes in capital, because when the sun shines, she shines upon us all. You may feel invisible, but visibility does not equal worth. We should not have to fight for our place upon this earth. And remember, your imagination is far more powerful than a rational man's dictation. The banks push inflation until the camel's back is breaking, but we the people are stronger than any nation of all colours and creeds. We were revolutionaries, we were the birds and the bees, the leaves to the trees. Some of us fought against harsh regimes, and there were those who cured disease, and some devoted their lives to religion. Some of us bore children, and some of us were hell-bent intent on creating division, and today we're sold lies through the television. The imperialist system has swaddled us in materialism, and we fail to question the human condition. We follow the vision of those who cannot see. But we were the heights of glory and the depths of the deepest seas. We were the fair traders and the thieves, loving fathers, mothers, and we were the priests who would deceive. Some of us were cooks, and some of us were cleaners, and some of us had minor misdemeanors, and some of us were prophets, and some of us were university teachers and avid readers, and some of us revered the Orishas, and some of us worshipped animals and creatures, and some of us were poets, writers, and healers. So we don't need to be. We don't need to be kings and queens. Let us see the beauty in being revolutionaries beyond all means. Dreams reap and sow them at the seams, and best believe we will be what we were born to be, to love freely, fulfill our destiny, 'cause see those who composed Black history. They were people just like you and me. Thank you.
That was beautiful and beautifully read.
Oh, thank you.
That's a really lovely poem. Is that written, when was that written? Is that for this year's Black History Month?
That was for this year's Black History Month, yeah.
A brand new one.
Yeah, so it was for Young Scott and also Intercultural Youth. They sort of teamed up and they asked me to do a poem for it. And I really wanted to sort of capture sort of the complexities of, you know, what we consider Black history, but also to kind of draw attention to the continuities of this imperialism and colonialism, which are still so prevalent today and are a direct continuation of the transatlantic slave trade and the subsequent capitalism which followed. And yeah, so trying to capture a lot, but
capture it does, I must say.
Thank you.
Do you have something else you'd like to perform for us?
Yes. Yeah, so I have a poem called Black Love. And I just want to give just a little intro to this poem. It was written when I was visiting my mum in Barbados. My mum's originally from Barbados. And she moved back there a couple of years ago. And so it was the first time I'd ever been. And I was really stunned at the how would I describe it? The legacy of slavery in Barbados is just, you know, so if you know anything about slavery, you can see the continuities of that existing within their contemporary society. So the poem's really about conversations I would have with a Bayesian friend that I made over there about the context of slavery within Barbados and how that legacy has continued. So this is Black Love. I knew from the moment we met on First Street. I knew from the moment the police pulled past and started asking questions. In patois they spoke, so I didn't know exactly what they were saying. I stand praying that they don't touch him. My beautiful black boy, big brown eyes look through me, my soul. I beg they leave him whole, intact, leave him in all his omega, in all of his black, don't touch him. In my rivers he swim, I saw myself in him, to his rivers I swim. Together we swam in seas, he sees me and my love, he broke the news to me. I was not the only one. See, my black boy's economically out of luck, got a webbed weave spun, some spin, some weave. And just like a former me, the spider in the web is selling bodies. Hello, this is slavery, baby, this is disease, selling breath to whiteness, come on now, please, this is racism. Hello, boy, this is slavery, black skin not worth more than pennies, then common sense, sorrow. Hello, bodies, come on, this is slavery, baby, this be disease, selling to whiteness, we're selling bodies. Hello, come on, this is slavery. We're in the slave graves and he does the same. Together we be twin flame. We talk, no shame. Not yet we walk hunched with cane, but the sugar cane we chop down. Like our ancestors before us, we rock, we roots, we reggae, we baby, we rock steady. I on his knee, I believe together we be free in love, in liberty. The chains of slavery can't hold us. The chains of Armistad can't hold us. They chose us in all our omega. They tried to break us, debase, erase and shake us. Shakes the very soul in me, but in all our black, in all our beauty, we break free. I live in the struggle, but the struggle ain't me. Together we be African, Bayesian, royalty, communicating telepathically. The chains of slavery can't hold us. The chains of Armistad can't hold us through many lifetimes. You've been the rhythm, baby. I was already the rhyme in time. Bodies entwined, not even sexually. Just like you holding me so patiently, like the bark to the tree, we hold endlessly, tell stories effortlessly. And boy, your words, your story breaks me, and I can't bear to hear how your leg caught a boat propeller when you were 14. And your whole life you've been propelled, black boy to white dream, dreaming in a nightmare. Hello, black love, wake up from the white mare in a game of black truth or white dare. And I overstand, you don't even have to speak. Remember, I told you I hear telepathically, you trigger in me the love and the pain. You make me forget, never forget my slave name. I forget the chains, babe, I forget the waves. I am only sea, I see, foresaw. And it's like he's consumed me, eaten me whole like the ripest of fruits. We told each other dark black secrets like we knew we could, like we knew we should be more than this. Like our black skin was worth more than this, baby. We are worth all of this. We are the cause of this, this skin. I no longer hold remorse for this throat. No longer goes hoarse for this. Come on, we knew we could be more than this. Our black skin is worth more than this. And baby, hello, our black skin is worth all of this.
It must be very strange for you not to perform to like an audience, just to perform to me over Zoom.
It is strange, but I've done quite a few online performances of recent, so I'm kind of getting used to it, but it's just, nothing will beat being in front of an audience, of course.
Absolutely, must be a brand new medium. What I wanted to ask you is, you have a really, really unique style, and I was wondering if what inspires the way that you read? Because I feel like it's very melodical and you focus a lot on the rhymes, even the half rhyme. And I was just wondering what inspired you and why you read that way.
Yeah, you know, I don't actually know. Like, I don't actually have that much awareness of, like, my craft in that sense. Like, I just write and I just see what comes out. And, you know, I'll sort of maybe get a theme or an idea that I want to cover. But more often than not, it's more of a stream of consciousness as opposed to a well thought out choreographed idea.
Of course.
In that sense. I mean, I love music. I love rhyme. I love rhyme. I don't know what it is about it. I just love it. So yeah, I suppose it's not necessarily intentional in that way. But yeah, that's just kind of how I communicate through poetry. That's my poetic voice, I suppose.
Lovely. Thank you so much for reading for us. And thank you very much for coming on. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. Before you go, do you have any upcoming performances or projects you'd like to advertise to our listeners?
So yeah, I'm actually going to be taking part in a play written by the amazing Hannah Lavery. It's being performed at the Lyceum Theatre and it'll be streamed to audiences. So we're starting rehearsals for that next week. And we did it last Fringe and it was like a work in progress play, but it got really good reception, and it's called The Lament for Sheku Bayo, and it's about this black man who was effectively murdered by the police in 2015, and there's never been any justice regarding his case. And yeah, it's just a really beautiful play, and yeah, highly recommend. Just for what you'll learn about the case, I think is very important, and then obviously the artistic temperament that Hannah has put across. So yeah, that'll be out in November, I believe.
Amazing. Very soon. Okay, well, look out for that, everybody. For now, I guess I'll say goodbye, Courtney. Thank you again for coming on. Thank you for your beautiful, beautiful words, and thank you for sharing them with us. Next up on the show, we'll have an improv performance by the Edinburgh Review, but first, continuing our autumnal theme this week, let's hear Autumn in New York as performed by Billie Holiday.
Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steel, they're making me feel I'm home. It's autumn in New that brings the promise of new love. Autumn in New York is often mingled with pain. Dreamers with empty hands may sigh for exotic lands. It's autumn in New York, it's good to live it again. Autumn in New York, the gleaming rooftops at sundown, autumn in New York. It lifts you up when you're run down. Jaded ways and gay voices who lunch at the Ritz will tell you that it's divine. This autumn in New York transforms the slums into Mayfair. Autumn in New York, you'll need no castle in Spain. Lovers that bless the dark on benches in Central Park greet autumn in New York. It's good to live in again.
You just heard Autumn in New York by Billie Holiday, and next we'll hear some comedy performances by the Edinburgh Review. Now, while they're unable to perform to audiences live on stage, the Review have turned to podcasting as a way to continue their work. And I take that as proof that radio is indeed the best artistic platform. What you'll hear next is an excerpt from one of their episodes, hosted by the lovely Nessa Blackmore. Take it away, Nessa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Edinburgh Review's podcast. I'm Nessa Blackmore, stand-up director for the Edinburgh Review, and your host for today's podcast. Now, I know I said last time that there would be someone else hosting, but surprise, it's me again. I'm actually self-isolating, so to take my platform away from me now would be silencing my suffering and officially a hate crime. There's also a huge waitlist for therapy on the NHS, so this is the closest and cheapest option available to me. I'm mentally ill, I can't pay my bills, so buckle up, kids, this is what the podcast is now. Aside from my deeply troubled past, today we'll be hearing from some other talented comedians whose traumatising upbringings resulted in a cracking sense of humour, and the Edinburgh Review sketch group, which is really just an AA meeting gone rogue. But first, the exciting news that the Review is now on radio, which you'll already know if you're listening on your radio, but obviously radio is different. We have new rules to follow. There's no swearing. What the f***? You'll notice our fun and whimsical quacking noise for censorship. We're making oppression cutesy this year. Without any further ado, let's crack on with some comedy. Allow me to introduce our first comedian for today's episode, the absolutely amazing Aisha Ramagiri. Take it away.
I always thought my first stand-up would be with me being on stage in front of a few people who had nowhere else to go and are pretending to laugh to not make me feel bad. And also maybe have some fries up there with me to keep me company. Yeah, that would have been good. Except we are in the middle of a freaking pandemic and I don't get to hear my audience fake laugh at me. So for this to feel right, I'm standing in front of my sleeping dog with a bunch of candy in my pocket to eat in between. You got that right, I'm going to be eating and doing this at the same time. Alright, so I didn't really come up with a lot of material, so this is just me ranting and hoping you all find my mental health issues funny. You know, in a way, you guys are sort of like my therapist, except I can't see you or hear you say that I have problems and that I need to sort my life out, so it's not a bad idea after all. Now, let's talk about the coronavirus a bit. Or maybe just a lockdown part, because no one wants to talk about a shit virus. Remember that time in March when we were stuck at home with nothing to do, and some idiot came up with the idea that we should all make the most of it? So you guys decided to bake banana bread, work out a little, do random DIY projects that no one needs, and flex that on social media to show that you have a life. Yeah, how the f*** do you all do that? I mean, it literally used to take me an hour to get out of bed every morning. And by morning, I mean 5 p.m. Notice how I said used to? Yeah, now I gotta haul my ass to the virtual classroom at 9 in the morning. That shit is stupid. It doesn't work half the time, and you know that there is someone out there doing pervy shit on the internet while listening to your tutor, trying too hard to be cool. Anyways, so I'm currently back home living with my parents, and boy do I miss those disturbing nights back in my shithole of a dorm now. I mean, just the other day it was a bit hot, so I was basically sleeping half naked. And my mom walks in. Sorry, did I say walk? I mean barge. She barged in without knocking, but it's a pretty common thing for a brown parent to do. They have no idea what privacy means. Anyway, she barged in, saw me, and said, and I quote, "You're gonna get nasty dreams if you sleep like that." Well, at least I'm getting some in my sleep. Let me be. Moving on. Let's talk about fries, or chips, or whatever you prefer to call them. Except they are fries and chips are a completely different thing. Okay, fries. Everyone loves fries. Hell, you can do whatever you want to do with them. I mean, if we can use macaroni to decorate a frame, we sure as f*** can use fries in some sort of craft. Or maybe even make a costume out of it. Another thing with fries is that you can eat them whenever and wherever you want to. Something to go with your burger? Fries. At the movies and want some tasty potato in your mouth? Fries. Having an existential crisis? You know the answer. Now, there are some people who don't mind eating a mushy, cold, soft fry. You all are disgusting. A mushy, cold, soft fry is basically like a limp dictator. And I don't know who wants a limp dictator, because that stuff's useless. And people who prefer a mushy-ass, soft, cold fry are people who have a thing for Kim Jong-un. Just saying. You know, dressing up as Kim Jong-un is scary. Anyone doing that this Halloween? Well, I know a lot of you don't have much plans this year, so here's an idea. Maybe put a blanket over your head, pretend to be a ghost, and watch Hocus Pocus. No, no, wait. 10 Things I Hate About You. Best movie to watch on Halloween. I mean, standing in front of your entire class and reading out a poem that sounds like it's been written by a third grader? Now that's horror. Another classic Halloween movie is The Parent Trap. Realizing your parents are dicks for separating you and your twin only because they couldn't stand each other, and they're all like, "Oh, you take the one on the left, and I'll take the one on the right. Problem solved." Yeah, problem solved, Dad. You couldn't even recognize that your kid is now faking an American accent after camp and has a piercing which is bound to get infected at some point. Problem solved my ass, dictator. And last but not the least, Home Alone. Classic. Now, what do we usually do for Halloween? We either end up at a party drunk, making out with a random pirate, or we just stay back and watch Home Alone and relive our childhood nightmare. But there are some people, on the other hand, who celebrate Halloween like it's Christmas. And by some people, I mean the Americans. So, that's it. I'm ending my stand-up by insulting the Americans a little. They should be lucky I didn't talk about their president. Anyways, hope you guys fake laughed your way through this and made my dreams come true.
Thank you, Aisha, for your excellent comedy. And furthermore, your frank views on American culture. That's right, this week I'm going in on America and no one's safe. Speaking of... Up next is the only American that I actually love, Johanna Rice, the light of my life. Ladies and gentlemen, take it away.
Thanks, Nessa. Hey, how are you guys doing? Great. Same. Welcome to the first and probably only episode of Drinking With Me, your complete stranger slash acquaintance slash friend, Johanna Rice. The idea is to combat feelings of loneliness and isolation that many of us are probably feeling by simulating a cozy get-together, except that I'm the only one talking and you're somewhere else entirely. I hope you're not in Pollock or Kincaid's, by the way. Christ, I thought Kincaid's was bad when I was there in first year and the only things going around were meningitis and the usual STDs. Whew. We used to have flat inspections, which I wasn't aware of at the time. So one day I hear a knock at my door and open it up to find this tired old lady with a clipboard. She was probably 25, but the things she had seen had aged her, so by the time she got to the top floor, she was about ready to move to Florida and get a lap dog. Anyways, I let her in and apologized for the mess on my floor, and she, being the lovely person she is, tried to put me at ease by saying, "Ah, don't worry, I have four daughters, and I haven't seen my carpet in months." Didn't require a response. But by the time I realized this, I was halfway through replying with, "Oh god, I know what you mean. I also have daughters." I do not. So instead what came out was, "Oh god, I know what you mean. I also have a carpet." So, On that note, has anybody else completely forgotten how to socialize? Like, I haven't had to self-isolate yet, but it's probably because I never go outside in the first place. The most exciting thing that happened to me this summer was the flight back to Edinburgh. I was putting my backpack in the overhead space and complimented the cute lady in front of me on her massive, hot, pink backpack. And she said, "Thank you, it's a baby backpack." And for some reason, I thought it'd be a good idea to reply with, "Ah, cool. So how many babies can you fit in it?" We did not end up having a steamy 12-hour plane romance.
For our listeners at home, Johanna is staring into the distance and contemplating her life choices. Hi, I'm Other Rice. I'm also in this episode because statistically, podcasts do better when there's more than one host, especially when that host is Johanna Rice.
Hey! Oh, Other Rice, I can't stay angry at you. You're my favorite coping mechanism. Ah, that's the kind of banter you can expect on Drinking With Me. You're a complete stranger slash acquaintance slash friend, Johanna Rice. So the year's coming to a close, finally. 2020, probably won't make it onto the list of the top 10 years of this decade, not gonna lie. It's like the Monica of the 2020s, if Monica had killed over 1 million people by season 5. Some people have made the best of these times, though. I really admire people who've taken this as an opportunity to learn a new skill, like playing an instrument, or painting, or baking insane amounts of bread for some reason. Personally, I'm trying to get a really fat ass. I want my glutes to be superhuman, but the rest of me to be just human. It's not for any aesthetic reason. I just think butts are funny. I want to knock people over when I turn around in a queue. I want to feel like I'm sitting in a high chair whenever I sit down. I want to order custom trousers because none of the ones they sell in shops will fit. I want to bend space-time. I want this bit to have a punchline. I want to order custom mattresses with a dent built in so I can still lie flat on my back. I want Jason Derulo to write a bad song about me, ideally featuring Snoop Dogg. When I get old, I don't want my spine to curve forwards. I want it to curve backwards. I'll have a Zimmer frame on wheels that I can lean back against as I walk. So, yeah. It's not quite poetry, but it keeps me busy. So we're coming to the end of this hellish Twilight Zone 5 minutes of a stand-up set, I guess. Thanks for listening. Call your friend. Have a cuppa. Watch a film with your flatmates. I hope you stay safe. And have a good... What month is this? Oh crap, it's the Halloween show and I haven't said anything spooky. I hope you're doing well because you're paying full tuition for online courses and your rent's due next week.
Thanks, Johanna. I also have a drinking problem. Anyway, hold on to your socks and then wash your hands because feet are gross. Up next, it's the Edinburgh Review Sketch Group.
This Zoom tutorial thing is weird, isn't it?
Tell me about it. Almost as intense as fresh as Zoom fencing. It's a good thing my new computer arrived before classes today.
What happened to your computer?
You clearly haven't been to Zoom fencing classes. Asking an ignorant question like that. If your computer's intact, your opponent ain't stabbed, as we say in the Zoom fencing biz.
So, you have to buy a new computer every time?
Oh, don't be stupid. It's cheaper to buy a bunch of computers in bulk. It was just the freshest thing. I wasn't prepared. I've got 6 computers ready for next time. You know, the first team have like 27. I'm getting distracted. What's your name?
Howard McBaldeagle. What's yours?
Howard McBaldeagle? Now that is an interesting name. Where's it from? Where are you from?
The surname is a hybrid of my two nationalities. First of all, the Mick is from Aberdeen, where my mum's from and where I actually grew up, and the only place that really needs to be mentioned.
And where else does that surname come from?
Well, the bald eagle is from my dad's side of the family.
And they are from...
America. I mean, originally, Like I said, I really grew up...
America!
Yeah.
Oh my god. Tell me more about America.
I mean, I've only been there once when I was 5. Let me tell you about Aberdeen. Did you know that we're the home of the biggest man-made hole in Europe?
Do you have, like, a president?
Of Aberdeen.
Of America.
Oh, yes.
Sidewalk!
I say pavement.
Oh my god. Can you take a lot of calories? I love calorific food. You know people here, they can't take calories, but I love them. Calories for days!
I guess I like calories.
Oh my god, you are so American! You need to take me to the authentic American places around here. What do you call them? Diners.
Diners?
Yeah, that's what I said. Diners. There's nowhere actually authentic here. I've heard that in the real places, you know, the ones you see all in the Americans, that they hold you to gunpoint if you don't tip them. Guns! And they serve your food on a lasso.
A lasso? How does that even work? Are you sure you've heard right?
So, you can't use a lasso and you're American?
I don't think... Why would...
Can you answer some questions about America? Is everyone a cowboy or just like 80% of the people? Do you all have wooden teeth in honor of George Washington? Are microwaves really programmed to be 100 times louder for the weak American ear? Actually, I know that one's true. I listen to a podcast.
I don't know. I don't think microwaves are any louder.
Wait, you don't know? And do you not have strong opinions on the right to open and carry firearms?
I think you're kind of oversimplifying a very complex...
Oh my god, so you don't like guns? So... You're, like, not even really American, then. Bro, why were you pretending to be American? That's so weird, man. Do not show up to Zoom fencing, man. Don't even think about it, fake American.
All right, thank you everyone for coming. I hope you all had productive discussions. The next American literature tutorial will be at some point in the future, so, check your timetables.
And tonight on Channel 4 Investigates, was Love Island ahead of its time? We talked to sociologist Linda Smith, as well as exclusive interviews with the islanders themselves.
If you think about it, those islanders have been lounging around all day with their flatmates, then getting changed, then having drinks in the house with those same flatmates for years. The 16 hot people to one large bedroom approach may just be that new normal we've been talking about. All this time, people have been calling Love Islanders thick, but what if they were just living the future?
Sorry, lady, are you single, or are you and him, like, a thing? Because I don't want to tread on toes.
This is a documentary, not an episode of actual Love Island. You're meant to speak to the camera, tell your thoughts to the camera.
Oh, right, sorry. I don't know if this bird's single, or if her and that other guy are, like, a thing. Yep. Yes. Hi, Mom. Yes, I'm at the big view now. Yes, I ironed my shirt. No, that's not why I'm... Yes, I read the whole WikiHow job interview page. You know I have that habit. That nervous habit. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, you're gonna make me say it. Whenever I get nervous, I forget what bees are. You're right. I'm being ridiculous. It'll never come up.
Next, please.
I've got to go, Mum.
Nice to meet you, Dom.
It's Timothy. I mean Tim.
Sorry, Tim. Don't be nervous. Why don't you talk to me a bit about why you applied for the job?
Right.
The beekeeping job.
Right. Beekeeping. Well, my whole family was into it. My parents were both beekeepers, so there were always bees everywhere. In the morning, I'd wake up to that familiar bee smell. You know that smell. The smell of fresh bees in the morning.
Wow. And from such a young age, was that challenging?
Well, obviously there was the language barrier. When the bees arrived, I didn't know what language they were speaking. But now I'm pretty sure it's Turkish.
Right. Any other challenges?
Not really. The bees are docile most of the time. Apart from when the full moon comes out, obviously. I was always told to stay away from bees at full moon. That's when they get you. Oh, that's when they get you.
Any top beekeeping tips you can give us?
Yeah, a big one is to make sure you keep the bees clean. I find if you pour some soap and water down the hive, then blow dry them, that normally does the job.
Have you ever sold your honey, or did your family just keep it?
Why would we sell honey? If you're coming to ask questions about bees, at least keep it bee-themed, mate. You'd almost think... You'd almost think you didn't know what a bee is.
Okay, what's your favorite thing about being a beekeeper?
It's just that smile on the face of the bees at the end of the day. Makes it all worthwhile.
Okay. Final question. What is a bee?
Think, Tim. What would the all-knowing anonymous author of WikiHow's How to Nail a Job interview say? Let me answer that question with a question. What isn't a bee these days?
Oh god, you are so right. You've got the job.
Tonight on MasterChef, our final five contestants take on their biggest new challenge yet, becoming prison chefs. But will their twice-baked souffles have Greg and John wishing they were behind bars?
Oh my god, it's quite difficult really, trying to get the right measurement of wine and the risotto and also avoiding Stabby Dave.
He loves to stab. See you tonight at 8 p.m.
Ugh, I can't sleep. I'm way too hungry. I can probably have a snack without waking Helen up. Okay, let's see. What do we have here? What about this? Beef burrito. Heat in the microwave for 2 minutes. Easy enough. And now... Whoa. Since when is this microwave so noisy? Okay, let me just try. Whoa. How did it even make that noise? Okay, and what about... Maybe if I do... and this? The other button? What is it?
What is all that noise? It is 3 a.m.
Sorry, Helen, I was hungry and...
And what? You decided to blast opera at full potency?
Well, it's not my bad the microwave is so incredibly loud.
Do you even have eyes, Aisha? Look right here, it's on noisy mode.
Why does a microwave even need a noisy mode?
Well, it was made in America.
Thank you to the Edinburgh Review Sketch Group. I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week, but tune into Fresh Air next week for part two. Don't forget to follow the Edinburgh Review on Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify to stay up to date with all our upcoming shows. That's it from me. I've been Nessa Blackmore, and I'll probably be hosting again next week. I am inevitable. Bye!
That was the Edinburgh Review performing their new comedy podcast. You can tune in again next week to hear the remaining half of that episode, or go check out the review themselves to hear more. That's all from the Art Show for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and remember to tune back in next Thursday at 3 for more arts-related content, or check out our previous episodes on Spotify. To play us out, let's have Beachcomber by Real Estate.